too soon?
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Stop doing it.
Phil, have you gone mental?
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
It is time for a Too Wretched for Radio. Is it too soon to judge? Whom? Francis Chan. He's been making evangelical news lately because of his associations, participating in events with teachers I think most of us would recognize and go, what? You're a conference with Benny Hinn at Mike Bickle's place for a number of years? Heidi Baker? Todd White? Boing! Apparently, Francis Chan heard the criticisms, the concerns that people have with his associations, and he responded with a lengthy letter. We shared that on Wretched Radio, basically explaining, hey, I probably haven't been as careful as I ought to be. I'll try to check into these guys more in the future so that I don't step on any landmines. I've got some guys that'll help me with this. Well, that was about 10 days ago. And since that time, I've seen a poster of Francis Chan being promoted in an event with Heidi Baker and a cavalcade of kooks after the letter. Now, that was just a few days ago. Furthermore, we have some footage for your consideration of Francis Chan again appearing at a One Thing event. This is, as best I can tell from the source on this, he is with Roman Catholics. They washed his feet, and he gushed on about Pope Francis. That was after the letter saying, I'm going to watch it in the future. Phil Johnson, he gave a letter. Now, you and I understand that sometimes timing and how things play themselves out. He gave a letter saying, hey, I'm going to watch it in the future. It appears he's not watching it much based on the two evidences that I just gave. Can we say, well, maybe he just wanted to do those events because he didn't want to cancel on them, so he's just doing a make good on that? Or should we be looking at these events and going, okay, he hasn't changed at all?
Yeah, it's hard not to make that conclusion. It is disturbing to watch. I saw a webpage that somebody wrote, I think it might have been a blog post or some kind of news item, which says, the headline says something like, we're watching Francis Chan apostatized before our eyes. And I can't resist saying that's what it looks like. That's definitely what it looks like. He's drifting further away rather than closer. And I think a lot of these people who are on the outer perimeter of orthodoxy or even across the line into heresy in some cases, the prosperity gospel people who have embraced him, I think they see him as a kind of trophy. He's a graduate of the Master Seminary, so he has in their minds some kind of affiliation with John MacArthur and look how nice he is. You know, he accepts us, he embraces us. and Francis himself sort of couches all of these associations in the language of love and brotherhood and unity, and he's striving for the unity of the church. And what he's actually doing is obscuring the clear line between truth and error, which is a divisive thing to do. But it's not uncommon these days, in these postmodern times, for people to do things that are extremely divisive and confusing, and then claim everybody who criticizes them is the cause of whatever division results.
All right, now he did, I believe you read his statement to the people concerned about his associations.
Yeah, in fact, didn't we talk about it on a previous episode of Too Wretched? I think we may have. But I have seen it.
Wretched, too wretched. I can't keep my wretched is straight. Nevertheless, you and I would have liked something more robust, but it was okay. I'll try to watch it in the future. That was, 2 weeks ago. Within those 2 weeks, two events that we're aware of that he has participated and is going to participate in that are bad associations. Can we cut him slack and say, well, he just didn't want to cancel on him in the last minute. Can we?
Well, I'm not inclined to cut him slack at this point because it's not as if these are new concerns that are being raised about his drift. This goes back to when he left his church, basically, and and originally said he was going to go do mission work in Thailand or something like that, and ended up instead basically, you know, traveling the conference speaking circuit. And so he goes to whatever large conferences invite him, and now that he's affiliated himself with the Bethel people and the Kansas City, IHOP, I don't think any conservative Orthodox conferences are going to be inviting him, because it would send a terribly confusing message. So I expect that you're going to see this drift go further and further until he pretty much embraces and identifies with the people that he's been partnering with.
Are you prepared now to practice some self-control, Phil Johnson?
Yes, it's maybe not my strong point, but...
You're going to give it a go.
Yeah.
This clip is 28 seconds long. You don't get to play stop. We're just going to listen to the entire 28 seconds, and then you comment. This is Francis Chan from really just days ago, participating, again, foot washing ceremony with Roman Catholics and sounding awfully ecumenical.
You know how you can tell when someone's in love? Right. It's pretty obvious. It's like you're obsessed with this guy you just met. You're obsessed with this woman. Like, okay, enough with your baby. Okay. They get obsessed in love. And my biggest concern is when I talk to people who call themselves Christians, I don't see that look in their eyes when they talk about the person of God, like Jesus.
That's actually aimed at conservative folks.
Right.
He goes on to say, but when I look in the eyes of some Roman Catholics, I see that love, and he's concerned.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of rhetoric is a pattern with him, and has been for some time, where he has criticized, and in fact, I know you and I have talked about this, he threw his own former church under the bus. He has criticized pretty much everyone who is conservative and has expressed any kind of concern about the direction he's going. He misses no opportunity to criticize them and portray them as unloving because they're concerned about sound doctrine or truth or whatever. He keeps implying that Christian love is somehow the antithesis of discernment or concern for the truth or sound doctrine. These things are what he sees as divisive and doesn't realize that what he's doing is what actually causes both confusion and division.
Yeah. See, I'm looking in your eyes right now, and I can tell whether you're a Christian or not. That's kind of an odd way to discern whether somebody's saved, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that what he just said sounds, you know, really... you know, emotional, and it appeals to the heartstrings and all that, but there's nothing biblical about what he just said. In fact, I don't see the disciples, Peter, least of all, the one who probably most definitively declared his love for Christ to Christ's face, but you don't see any comparison there between that and the sort of, you know, childlike romantic love that Francis Chan seems to be saying is the necessary expression of our love. Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. So he clearly connects truth and obedience with the proper expression of love. It's not the look in your eyes. It's not, you know, the sort of Jesus is my boyfriend music that we've all been critical of for years. It seems Francis has absorbed that notion that if we really love Jesus, then we'll see him like a teenage girl would see her boyfriend. And that's a corruption of love. It's a childish and an unbiblical idea of what love for Christ entails.
Do you think you got 44 seconds of self-control in you?
No, I'm pretty sure I don't. I mean, that one, I put my microphone on mute so that I didn't yell stop at you.
Oh, come on.
I did.
Here you go. Put it up. Put it on mute.
All right.
They may love Passion. They may love Hillsong Worship. They may love John Piper. They may love whoever it may be. But when they talk about Christ, I don't hear them saying, I was with Jesus. It was incredible. Like the thought that I could come into his presence. I just don't want to leave him. It's the one thing I want to just, I can't get enough of just sitting there and just gazing and just staring at the beauty of God. Like, I don't hear that type of language. Like, they are in love with Jesus. And my fear is at the end, like John, Matthew 7 says, many are going to come to me and say, hey, didn't I do this? Didn't I do this? Didn't I do this? And he's going to say, depart from me. I never knew you.
Phil?
It's just very disturbing to hear him characterize love for Christ in such an unbiblical way, because Scripture speaks very clearly about what love for Christ looks like. Jesus himself said, again, if you love me, keep my commandments. And that's totally missing from what he, and what it sounds like to me is someone whose love for the Lord has grown cold, and he's trying to reinvigorate it or approximate it by some artificial emotional means, because he's moved away from the truth, his love for the truth and his own, you know, personal commitment to biblical truth seems clearly to have waned. And so he's left with talking about love in emotional terms in a way that would appeal.
Phil, in fairness, I think that he has talked in emotional terms like that since I read Crazy Love, which was his introduction to the evangelical big stage. Very emotive fellow. And one of the things that I've noticed about Francis is, for instance, when he gets introduced, he'll walk out onto the platform and he'll say very emotively, I was supposed to talk about this, but I've been watching the worship, and I talked to somebody in the back, and we had such a great conversation. I don't know what I'm going to say and talk about. And he seems to be swayed very easily by emotions, and I wonder if that's the very thing that has caused him to be attracted to the apparent emotional displays of the NAR and the Hillsong business.
Right. I mean, I think that's a good observation. And it's also the very thing, I think, that attracts them to him. And, he's somebody with roots in a credible branch of conservative evangelicalism. And so they want to adopt him as their own because he speaks their language. I would say the besetting sin of contemporary evangelical Christianity, and particularly the further out on the edges of the charismatic movement that you go, where people tend to equate just sheer emotion, passion, with commitment to Christ, and they are not the same. I mean, it's absolutely true that love for Christ and commitment to Christ should stir our deepest passions, but what he's describing and what he's displaying is a kind of shallow emotional sort of thing.
It's not more emotive, really, than emotional. All right, 17 seconds of self-control.
Then there are those times when you meet people, you talk about Jesus, you talk about the scriptures, and they just come alive. And then you find out later, wait, you're Catholic.
Okay, so Catholics have got that look in their eyes. He's seeming to say, look it, there are some Catholics who have a better relationship with Jesus than you people who like John Piper.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, but he's obviously saying this for the benefit of the people he's with at the moment. You know, you're talking about he's surrounded right there with Roman Catholics. It's the same thing he did at IHOP when he talked about how superior he thought their devotion to Christ was compared to the more conservative churches that he has come out of and grown up in. And, you know, again,
he's a feelings driven guy is what it's. I mean, he's appeared to be that way as long as I can remember. But I think that what we are seeing is the imbalance. Yes, of course, we are moved and stirred when we think about the Lord. But that doesn't mean that every single aspect, that it's emotive and romantic sounding and extreme in its presentations. That just seems to be a wrong understanding of what a deep abiding love for the Lord is.
Right. It's like you said, we are moved by our devotion to the, but move to what? Move to obedience, move to a love for the truth. You cannot have love for Christ and contempt for the truth at the same time. So whatever emotion you may be feeling, if it isn't connected to a loyalty to and love for the truth, then, you know, it isn't true love for Christ, because he is the way, the truth, and the light. So
20 seconds, Phil.
People have been trying to put me in a box for as long as I can remember. So are you Baptist? Are you, you know, Reformed? Are you charismatic? Are you, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what all those are. I don't say that in humility. I just couldn't tell you what all the points of each of these denominations are.
Really?
Yeah.
He got through Master's Seminary and he didn't know those things? How did he skate through? Or is there something else going on here?
Well, he's pretending that his current sort of ambiguity and nonchalance with regard to truth and doctrinal distinctives, somehow that's superior to people who he describes as being in a box, because, you know, they're more clear about what they believe and where they stand. This is a studied ambiguity here.
He doesn't know the difference between Reformed and Charismatic and Catholic. Is that
really possible? Of course he does. What he's saying here, if you read between the lines, what he's actually communicating is his own refusal to take a stand in any of those areas.
The motivation behind it, because most certainly he has to know.
And so there are people in the world I grew up in that raise their hand and prayed a prayer that think, oh, because I did that, I'm in. And then there's people maybe that you grew up with that partake of communion and confess, and I don't know, whatever works, you know, you guys do, you know, in your different, you know, groups. But whatever, it's like you find your security in the wrong thing. Rather than knowing him and really trusting in him for your forgiveness. And I think that's where we're in agreement on.
With Roman Catholics.
Yeah, what he says there is true, that there are people who think because they walked an aisle, raise a hand, or prayed a prayer, or whatever, that they're in, and they don't trouble themselves with any kind of self-examination or concern for, love for the truth. But, I mean, he himself is showing that he's sort of guilty of that himself, because he's willing to discard so much biblical truth for the sake of an artificial, I don't know, what would you call it? He's trying to make himself sound loving and yet not committed to any particular idea of truth. That's why he doesn't want to be put in a box.
Well, you know, he does a little category. It's a little slippery when it comes to the categories.
Right.
You and I would agree. Far too many people in evangelical, they've got with their methods of manipulation, raise your hand, close your eyes, bow your head, come to the altar. We agree with all of that.
Right. There's a truth beyond that, though, that applies to the Roman Catholics that he's talking to. They do believe, and by their own catechism, dogmatically hold that baptism is the instrument of justification, and so that if you've been baptized, you are in. They fit in the category he says he rejects, but he's pretending instead that they agree with him that, you know, I don't know. He's sort of giving a watered down view of justification by faith, which these Catholics would patently reject.
Well, here's what Francis Chan said, because I watched as much of this as I could. I honestly, Phil, I'm not trying to be snarky, but I found the whole thing rather disturbing. This impromptu, we want to wash your feet, and the Roman Catholic guy gets down and he takes off his shoes and socks and washes his feet, and then he talked about visiting Pope Francis, and he said, Pope Francis told me, we believe in justification by faith alone. Yes, we have other differences, but can't we just start there and work together because we both agree in justification by faith alone? Does the Roman Catholic Church believe in justification by faith alone because Francis Chan said Pope Francis said that? Or does the Roman Catholic Church believe in justification by faith alone because of its codified statements?
Yeah, no, the official Catholic position is spelled out in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's a paperback book that you can buy that gives the official and going all the way back to the Council of Trent and statements from the Council of Trent are actually reproduced in the current Catholic Catechism, and this is the dogmatic position of the Church, that if you say we're justified by faith alone, Rome pronounces an anathema on you. And I don't believe, I mean, I wouldn't take his word for it that Pope Francis even said that. He may have said, we believe in justification by faith, but Catholics have never believed in justification by faith alone. They insist on faith plus the sacraments,
well, even,
as I said.
What, even if he used that key word alone, which was the big word with Martin Luther,
right?
He could still get away. Yes, you are justified by faith alone. But then you have to, in order to maintain, not do this and do that. So even if he did say that, it's still a works-based system.
Well, and if he said it, he's improperly portraying the official Catholic position. It wouldn't be the first time Pope Francis has done that, has said something that, you know, doesn't reflect official Roman Catholic dogma. It's weird to have the infallible Pope making so many statements that, you know, according to Roman Catholic dogma are wrong. But that's part of the confusion that ecumenism produces. And that is what Francis Chan has in common with the current Roman Catholic hierarchy. There's an ecumenical agenda behind this to try to get everyone lined up behind the same sort of banner that sheds any doctrinal distinctives that would make the gospel clear or definitive and affirm what Scripture says. It's why you don't hear him quoting Scripture there. He's just making vague references to love and, you know, unity and all of that. That's the spirit of ecumenism and why it's wrong.
But, Phil, I think you're failing to remember this Pope is really humble. He won't let anybody kiss his ring anymore.
Well, I wonder if they wash his feet.
Last one.
You guys have no idea how much flack I got for speaking at one thing the first time. My little tribe that I came out of is like...
You know what? Wait a second. I'm going to start that clip from the again, Phil, because my original question was, is it too soon? Now, remember, he has already responded to the concerns that he went to one thing. He's already responded that he's been with Bethel and IHOP and Hillsong, etc. So he said, I'm going to do better. This is after he presented that semi mea culpa.
You guys have no idea how much flack I got for speaking at one thing the first time. My little tribe that I came out of is like anti-charismatics. And so then here I am on stage affirming Mike Bickle. And then the next year come Matt and Audrey. And I'm on stage hugging all three of them, you know?
Yeah, I believe he's talking about Matt Maher, who's a Roman Catholic.
And it's like, wow, Francis is, we're done with him. We're absolutely done with him. He's a false prophet. He's this. And, you know, it's like, whatever now. You know, is it hurtful? Yes. You know, because you think, wait, I thought we were family. But I can't, like, not love this other part of the family because I see the Spirit of God in them.
Letter or not, is it too soon to be judging where Francis Chan is at, Phil?
No, I mean, I think this sort of public display where he refers to the tribe he came out of, he clearly regards conservative evangelicalism as something he's left in a rearview mirror. So, you know, and he's pretty much given his own chronicle of his recent apostasies right there. And he's clearly not reconsidering or doing better or any of that. I just see a tendency in him to say whatever he thinks his current audience wants to hear. And that is, there's no more troubling tendency than that for someone who's on the conference circuit and, you know, supposedly preaching truth, because this isn't truth. This is an abandonment of truth in favor of an emotionally based partnership with people without concern to who might be a false teacher, who might be teaching false doctrine. He says he sees the Spirit of God in these people that he's partnered with, and yet they are, some of them are manifestly false prophets, heretics of all different kinds, people who deceive other people for the sake of money. The people he has partnered with over the past 2 or 3 years perfectly fit the New Testament description of what false teachers are and what we should be on the lookout for. And he's essentially saying he rejects all of that now, just because he wants to be part of a family where everybody embraces one another with no restrictions on whether we actually agree. So he wants a unity that is not based in truth, and that's a false unity. It's the kind of thing that has troubled the church all the way back to the very beginning, and it's disappointing to see him so militantly rejecting biblical truth in favor of an artificial unity.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?